welcome to episode 5 of Inside Song with me, Paul Costello. Hopefully you're keeping well, and thanks for taking the time to download the podcast. And I haven't been around these parts for a while, and that's due to being back at work, but also my laptop packed in on me last week, so I've been having major computer troubles, but we are back up and running, at least temporarily. And if you would like to get in touch with me, please do. The email address is insidesongpod@gmail.com. You can get in touch on Twitter at insidesongpod, and on Facebook we are at insidesongpodcast. It would also be great if people could take the time to just do a short review of the podcast on iTunes to get the podcast better placed or something like that. I don't really know what happens, but apparently it's good stuff. So if people could do that, that would be much appreciated. We have our first American guest on the podcast today, and that is Patrick Nahoda. He is the frontman of a three-piece grunge band, also called Nahoda. They're based in the greater Nashville area, and they came to my attention when they were on tour here, and one of the gigs they'd done was in Waterford, and myself and Kerry Haskins was supporting them, and I have been following them ever since. So they have an album due in October, they have a single just released, and they also have some digital singles up as well. And Patrick will talk about all that in the interview, the recording process of their album. We go into some of the tracks and lots of interesting stuff, including his views on what it's like to be a rock band based in Nashville, because obviously most people, when you say Nashville, you think of country music. So that's really interesting to hear his opinions on that. Anyway, let's go straight to the interview. I began by asking Patrick to take me back to the music he was listening to when he was a child.
Music's like one of the first memories I have. I remember being a kid, my dad was always listening to music, and so was my mom. Neither of them were musicians, but there was always a guitar in the house until I was about, I don't know, 10 or 11. It only had one string on it, but it still was in the house. So I'd try to find the melodies on it, on that one string, as to what I was listening to on the radio or the records that were playing in the house. You know, when I was growing up, it was always like Marty Robbins and Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash. And my dad was kind of an old school country guy like that. He didn't really listen to anything too modern, let alone rock and roll. So, like I said, as I was growing up, it was stuff like that, like Neil Diamond, Simon and Garfunkel stuff, you know. And then 1991. It was like September. My birthday is in October, and it was like a week before my 10th birthday. I was watching MTV like way too late at night after everybody had gone to bed. And I think it was Alternative Nation was on, and they debuted Smells Like Teen Spirit, and that just kind of changed my life. You know, hearing Nirvana and seeing that video just kind of like blew my mind wide open. And then I was just like hooked. I wanted to play guitar and you know, write songs, stuff like that. I'd already, you know, I sang in choir in like first grade and second grade at the school that I went to, and we played recorder. I played the bells choir as well, so you know, there was music before that, but that was the first time that like something new and something that wasn't like handed to me like just kind of blew my mind open. And we traveled a lot, and I'm an only child, so it was my parents and I, and, you know, they gave me a CD, like, Walkman for my birthday so that I could listen to what I wanted to in the car and on their road trips, and then they gave me, you know, like, I don't know, like $30 or $40 and took me to the Warehouse Music to pick some CDs out, and the first three CDs I bought were, of course, Nirvana, Nevermind, But I also bought House of Pain, Fine Malt Liquor, and DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. I think it was the album was Summertime, I believe. So it was like all across the spectrum. But I mean, I think back on it now and I'm like, man, those three of those albums were really good. The other one was Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream. There's some songs on there that the first time I heard them, I was like, that was what made me want to learn how to play guitar. Like Nirvana was what made me want to like write songs and get like those kind of feelings and create those feelings. But Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream was what made me really want to like learn how to play guitar.
Yeah, massive albums. So going from that, then obviously you really started to get into playing guitar. And were you in bands then when you were a teenager and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I tried. Unfortunately, the way it was where I was growing up, it was like everybody was like, you're either a rocker or you're a rapper. And like everyone I went to school with was like totally into rap and hip hop. And of course, that was the same time that like Dr. Dre was coming out and Snoop was coming out and all that stuff was happening. And it was like this real solid like line of division between the two types of people, and the school I went to was mostly made up of people who were into rap and not rock. So I ended up spending a lot of time just playing and trying to learn these songs by myself. Played a high or a, like a mid school, like 7th grade, like junior high dance, and they pulled the plug on us. They like flipped the power switch in the middle of our set because we played Rape Me off of In Utero, and the teachers just lost it. I was at a private school, and that was just too much. So, the first show I ever had got like shut down officially by the principal and teachers at the power switch. So, but felt pretty rock and roll for that one.
That's brilliant, jumping in at the deep end. So the band now, is it Nashville you're based in, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just south by about 15 miles. That's where everybody is. That's where we recorded. That's where we play most of the time.
Not that I do a lot of research, but I believe you're not originally from Nashville, so you moved up there. Is that correct, is it?
Correct. Yeah, I was born in Santa Rosa, California, which is about 40 minutes north of San Francisco. And then I moved. Or my folks and I, like, we moved when I was about 11 years old to Sacramento, which is about 2 hours east of San Francisco at the base of the Sierra Mountains in California. And then after living there for the majority of my life, I moved up to Seattle for about 3 years. And then I met my fiance there. And as pricing got higher and we felt like we needed to change the scene, we decided to move to Nashville. And then we were here for a while before I met everybody in the band, but the band was formed here in Nashville. They didn't move with me. We didn't know each other back then.
How did you come together then? Was it just you kind of met these people, or were you actively looking to start a band, or how did you all get together?
Actually, it's kind of it, well, it's pretty interesting. I was playing with a couple of guys who I'd gotten set up with by a friend. But they were also his bass player and drummer. So I always kind of knew it wasn't going to be a permanent thing. But we were supposed to play a show right before Christmas. And unfortunately, the drummer had a death in the family and was unable to make it. And the bass player that was supposed to be there was like, well, if we don't have drums, I'm not going to be there. You should probably just do it on your own. I said, yeah, sure, whatever. So I went and did the show, did the set, played by myself. Rather than getting up there with an acoustic guitar, I showed up with a Les Paul and a guitar amp and just did my thing by
Cool.
myself. And yeah, we got done, and or I got done, and one of the guys who was playing in one of the bands that evening came up to me and was like, "Man, where's your band? Like, you need to be playing with a band." I was like, well, and I told him the story, and he's like, well, I don't want to step on any toes, but if this ever happens again and you have a show without a band, he's like, I know you just saw me play guitar and sing, but he's like, I'm a drummer. That's what I do. I went to school for percussion and learned how to really be a drummer and percussionist. He's like, I'd love to play some music with you. So I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I got his number. And then not too long after that, a bass player from one of the other bands that we were playing with that night, or that I was playing with that night, showed up, and he was like, man, I really dug that. We should jam sometime. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. So I got their numbers, and then I reached out to the guys again, and they just kind of both were like, man, we got a lot going on, and if these two guys are interested, you should reach out to them. So I did, and Jeremy, who plays drums now, was like immediately in. He was 100% in. So we got back on. Originally, we had a friend who was playing lead guitar with us, not the gentleman that was in Ireland when we played with you guys in Waterford, but he was playing guitar with us, and he had a bass player in mind, and the guy like was super busy, said he'd be there, and then didn't show up for rehearsal, said he'd be there for a show, didn't show up for the show, kind of thing. And Grayson, who I'd met that first night, was at the second show where this friend didn't show up again. And Grayson walked up to me, and I'll never forget this. He just looked at me, and he's like, so like I said before, if you want to jam, I'd love to. And I was like, well, we have this bass player that's supposed to be playing with us. And he just sat there, and he looked at me, and he looked around the room, and he goes, oh yeah, where is he? And I was like, yeah, that's a really good point. And he's like, because I'm here, I'm not in the band, but I've been to both your shows already. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Let's give it a try. And then it's been that way since.
The kind of music then that you would do, how would you describe it yourself?
Oh man, that's a tough one. The music kind of changes and varies so much. There's some songs that are almost like country influenced grunge, all the way through to like really kind of folky stuff. But some of the things that people have said recently that have stuck and really made sense. I've had numerous people who don't know each other and hadn't talked with each other that had said, it's like equal parts grunge and Americana. And then somebody was like, man, that's it, it's grungeacana. And I was like, oh God.
Gosh, starting
And
a
I
new
was like,
genre.
yeah, exactly. I'm like, that's fair. I mean, because it's kind of rootsy, but it's, our true roots are in that, like, 90s kind of West Coast vibe. But my drummer's from Memphis and my bass player's from Philly. So it's like everybody brings their own influence. But this album that we're releasing in October, somebody recently was like, this sounds like a Neil Young and Crazy Horse album, but like newer. And I kind of get that feeling from it as well. It's just rock and roll with like focus on the songs more so than, like there's no real guitar solos. There's nothing crazy. It's just big and crunchy and grungy. It's a three-piece band with a lot of sound. But yeah, I'd say it's like rock and roll with more of a focus on the songs than like showing off guitar solos, or it's not party rock, that's for sure.
Yeah, you've sent me a link to have a listen to the album, even though it's not out yet, which is great to hear a sneak preview. So I've already heard it, and it does sound massive. It sounds great, like you were saying there. And I suppose it probably comes from having such an eclectic taste when you were a child. It definitely is grunge, but you can hear there are some other elements creeping in, like bits of blues and perhaps from the countryside of things, kind of storytelling songs, but still delivered through that kind of more rock, more heavier side of things. That's kind of what I was getting from it. But I bet you're really chuffed with how it sounds, and you're probably really looking forward to getting it out there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that's all pretty spot on what you're saying there, and you have a great ear for it. Just from our conversation before, when you're like, so is this what I'm hearing? I'm like, 100%. We're thrilled to have a single on vinyl, like to have a 7-inch. I played it this morning, I listened to it, and it was just really something else to like put the needle down, turn it up, and just sit back and hear our music coming out of the stereo like that.
You hold up a knife as you watch the country bleed. You fly. flash a smile for the whole world to see. You don't give a damn about our country. You don't give a damn.
It'll be up on Bandcamp, and we'll open the link up to make it public on SoundCloud. I don't know if we're going to do this one on Spotify. I'm kind of, the whole corporate thing of Spotify just really kind of irks me. And then, like, if friends don't have a premium account, they can only stream it as, like, a really compressed MP3. And if they don't have an account at all, they can only listen to, like, 30 seconds without creating an account. We're on SoundCloud. I think anybody who streams anything can hear it in the WAV file format. So you actually get like the true quality of the recording, which I think is pretty important when you put that time and effort into it.
I've talked to other people here on the podcast about the whole pros and cons of Spotify and all that aside, but it is a kind of an awkward one because it's so powerful, is in that a lot of people obviously that listen to music have it, but at the same time, for the artist, it's probably not a good thing unless you're a massive selling artist. Over here, SoundCloud used to be bigger than it is now. And it's funny because for the band I'm in, sometimes we'll be sending out stuff to America. People in America always seem to ask for SoundCloud links. So it seems like it's bigger still over there. And if you're saying if it is the better quality, I didn't actually realize that it was.
You know, there was a point in time where it was like the only way, you know, when I was posting stuff up with SoundCloud, it was like, you know, 2006 or 2007 or something like that. And it was like the way to put stuff out. And then I'm pretty sure I remember getting emails saying like, SoundCloud is shutting down permanently. Make sure you pull all your stuff off of it if you want to keep it. And I was like, oh man, that's a bummer. And then it was like a year or so went by, and then all of a sudden it started blowing up again. And it streams it in whatever format you upload it as, where Spotify, like I said, compresses the shit out of it. And then like the whole 0.0007 cents a stream is such a slap in the face, because they're making so much money. Like the average Spotify employee salary is like $170,000 a year. And a friend of mine did the math one day, and he said that in order to make the average Spotify employee salary, you have to have like 12 million streams or something like that, maybe even more, in order to make that $170,000. And it's like, these guys are making so much money off of all the artists that are out there. And I get it. Like, that's what the business is and everything. It's fine with me. I'm like, don't hate the player, hate the game kind of thing. But I can make that decision from song to song because we're an independent artist. We don't have telling us what to do, and screw it. If I'm giving it away for basically free, I might as well just truly give it away for free and give it away in the best format possible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great that, you know, those other avenues are still there. And, you know, like you say, the Spotify pay per stream is a joke, but I don't think you'll find anyone that'll disagree with that. So the single itself, then, it's Dear Mr. President. So there's two tracks in that, is there?
Yeah, there is. The B-side is Eternal Sunshine, which is one of my oldest songs that I've ever shared. Not oldest songs, but oldest songs that I've written as an adult. I think I wrote it back in like 2006. You know, I didn't want to re-release it per se, but at the same time, when we were sitting here, we realized we had 11 songs recorded for the album, and only 9 could make it on the album just due to the length of the album. So we were like, cool, well, that's perfect. The single needs a B-side. So we did it that way. So all 11 songs will be available on vinyl. Just separate ones.
One more time, and I'll play this game. I hope she's planning to stay for a while. Great Wall got nothing on her.
You've been writing songs, you know, before you got into the band, and your solo stuff that I've seen of you doing on Facebook, that more kind of country influence is a lot clearer coming through. It's more laid back. And when you're writing a song, is it specific? Do you know, right, this is a song for just me, or this is one I can take to the band, or how does that work?
You know, usually I'll just write whatever comes to me and then kind of sit down with it after the fact and think about it, and then bring it to the band, see if it works, see if it doesn't. You know, every once in a while I'll come up with something. I'll go, okay, this definitely doesn't fit what we're doing as a band, you know. Those ones I'll just kind of keep for myself and for those random solo shows here and there. Most of the songs I in the past, at least, had been written, you know, unplugged, even if it wasn't with an acoustic guitar, just sitting there, like, not plugged in and being able to hear it on that quiet level, make sure that they're decent songs and not just hiding under a bunch of overdrive or effects.
So to jump to the album then, you decided you were going to record this material. What was the approach you took? And maybe go through that and tell us a bit about it.
We don't have a label supporting us. So we're doing this all, you know, out of the band fund and also from our own pocket or selling merch, you know, like whatever. But we knew when we were going into the studio that we didn't have the money to go spend, you know, 2 weeks tracking out 11 songs. And we as a band had played, I think we played somewhere in the vicinity of like 60, 65 shows in the past year since we started playing shows, which was March 27th of 2019. Needless to say, we felt pretty confident in our set. So, you know, when we first set up the studio time, we were going to go in and try to record a handful of new songs and then pick our favorites out of the set and record those. Since I had released some of those prior on like an older solo record, I was thinking that would be the best decision, but the closer we got, the more we realized it was going to be tough to finish like 5 new songs in like a matter of like a month and a half. So we decided, you know, screw it. We're going to go in and we're going to record the set. We're going to record every song from the set, like 3 or 4 times each, pick the best of each one, and then just go from there. And once we did that, it just took all the pressure off and made it, you know, exciting rather than stressful leading up to getting into the studio. And I should backtrack, because before we decided on all this, we had interviewed a few different folks in the Nashville area and kind of talked to them about like their recording process and what they do as engineers and producers. And in that interviewing process, we found this guy Michael Esser over at Sundog Recording Studios in East Nashville, and he just seemed to get it right off the bat when we were talking to him about what our goal was. And, you know, one of the questions I asked was, what about your studio would make you the choice for us? Like, what do you offer that somebody else doesn't offer? And he looked at me, he's like, I'm not gonna lie to you, he's like, everybody around here is good engineers and producers, but like the equipment I have is what really does it. And he's got like a tube driven preamp. It's like a 12 or 16 channel preamp. They don't even know what model it is, 'cause it came from the 50s and has no logos on it. Wow. And then he's got a Trident board. He's got a bunch of outboard gear, good mics, good rooms, really good vibe. You know, has a Hammond B3 with a big old Leslie in a closet. He's got all the equipment that you can hear in all its glory on the new single. by the way. There's
Cool.
organ all over that one. But the point is, you know, as we talked to him about all this stuff, he was like, I get what you're trying to do and I can make it happen. He said he learned a lot from Eddie Kramer, who did, you know, all the like Zeppelin stuff, and I think worked with Hendrix as well. So he knows how to work with rock and roll, you know, which is different around here. Like, we're realizing, like, there's a lot of rock and roll in Nashville, but, you know, for the most part, it's still country and Americana and pop based. So, you know, a lot of people we talked to were like, yeah, we have this console, and the stuff they'd share with us was super pristine and clean and crisp. And we're kind of like, yeah, you know, we want it to sound like a rock and roll record. And then he actually came out to a show. I told him, I said, look, we want to record this live. We got a show Friday night. Maybe come out and check it out. That way you get an idea of what we sound like live so we can make it happen on vinyl. And he showed up and he listened and he's like, I get what you're doing and I can make this happen. And he did 100%. So, like I said, we went in there for 3 days and we just banged out 11 songs. And we got it done. It was quite an experience. And, you know, sometimes I think having the restraints of money will make you do some pretty extraordinary things when you got those kind of time constraints. So, long story, but hopefully it answered your question.
Yeah, no, that does perfectly, because I was wondering, was it sort of an intentional thing or was it something that just came about? So it seems to be that it just sort of came about. But I mean, the result is, it sounds really, really good. And particularly on the reverbs and stuff, it does have that sort of vintage sound to it. It's just nice to hear a band playing live in a room together on a record. Which is something that isn't that common anymore, as we were saying. Do you have a title for the album yet?
Yeah, the title for the album is But Anyways.
Oh, okay.
We decided on that recently and just felt right.
So leading on from that then, because that is a single that's already available now and people can go and have a listen to it on wherever you listen to your music. So maybe just go through that song a bit, what's it about, and how it came together with the band.
Back in like 2000, 2001, I was living in Sacramento and I was playing with a good friend of mine, Justin Green. And we were in a band and things were going pretty well. And it just kind of, as quickly as it took off, it kind of dispersed. But he and I wrote the better part of that song back then. And I loved it. I mean, that was like one of those songs that when I wrote it, I was just ecstatic about it. It felt so good to play. Every time we played it, it was like so exciting to play. But it was also one of those songs that really made me realize, you know, at 20 years old, 21 years old, that like you don't get to write songs like that every single time. And I was listening, you know, it's like some of the other songs that I was writing at the time just didn't hold up. It's an interesting one because I had one critic review, whatever you want to call it, who wrote back and was like, I always feel like, or at the end of the song, I felt like you kept us at arm's distance and never quite gave us the resolution I wanted. And I thought, well, that's the point. That's the point of that song because it's like people keep you at arm's distance and people don't let you come close. And sometimes there is no resolution. And sometimes you fall in love with somebody who doesn't love you back and you just don't understand why when you're 20 years old, or family leaves without any explanation at all and never give you any resolution. They just leave or cut you off because of whatever they feel or think. And that's kind of what the song's about, you know. It's like, and the freedom and like I guess like liberation of like cutting those people loose, like letting them go and not holding on to that forever. The line on Smells Like Teen Spirit is, you know, oh well, whatever, never mind, you know. It's like just kind of that attitude of like, well, whatever, man, like get over it or move on. And that's kind of the same vibe, you know, with, you know, the phrase, but anyways, you know, it's like, there was this, but anyways,
but now,
you know,
it's not. Yeah.
And that's kind of what, you know, the title means. And that's kind of what the song is too. It's like, there was this thing, but anyways, I'm just moving on, you know. But when I wrote that song, I was listening to like the Benz on repeat and OK Computer and Kid A and Travis, all the Travis albums. And, you know, Coldplay was just coming out and big. So it was a lot of like Brit rock and Brit pop. And, you know, a lot of people that have heard it recently are like, damn, this sounds like Radiohead. And I'm like, yeah, because I wrote it when I was listening to a lot of Radiohead.
Yeah, I listened to it. I was kind of hearing, you know, it was kind of reminding me of that. It's almost like a big 80s power ballad, but then it kicks into the back into the grunge stuff. So that's what it was kind of reminded me of. But it's more Radiohead and Travis and Coldplay all blended up together.
That's what, you know, what was kind of influencing me at the time. But I mean, I was born in 1981. I grew up on all those 80s ballads, and I would have to say that I feel like any of those bands I mentioned, Travis, Coldplay, Radiohead, all those, especially the older Radiohead stuff, any of their like ballady stuff, you could tie any of that stuff back to those big 80s ballads too. So it's like all those influences.
Now I understand why you kept me away for so long. But anyways,
Lies Then, which is the other single, which was the first single released, and it probably is my favorite off the album, and was when I heard you playing live. I just love that. It's so real, kind of soft, and but you know it's going to blow up at some stage. You just know it's coming, but you're kind of waiting for it, and then when it happens, you're like, ah, there we go. When was that written, and how was that put together?
Oh man, that was I was written a couple of years ago, like a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. I had screwed up, and it wasn't anything like too major. I've been in the relationship that I'm in for 6.5 years now, and we're really honest with each other. Everything, it's like we communicate a lot. We're honest with each other, and we don't keep things from each other, and we just try to keep it as healthy as possible. And there was a situation that involved a guitar.
Did this guitar happen to get smashed by any chance?
No, thankfully nothing happened. But I had lied about how the whole situation came to be, basically. You know, it was like, oh, that's a gift, but it wasn't. It was just all these different kind of white lies to explain getting this relatively expensive guitar. And it was one of the only times where I've deservedly and been called out, period, let alone deservedly, by Masha, my fiance. And, you know, she was like, you know, I can't believe you lied to me over something so stupid as this. And I had nothing to respond with. I really didn't, you know, I just basically said, you're right, I'm sorry, which is the only thing I could say. But I don't know, maybe a month or so later, I was like sitting in my room with a guitar, and I just started playing that descending chord change. And I just started singing, and the first line of the song just kind of came out of my mouth. And then the next line came out of my mouth. And then the next line came out of my mouth. And then I realized that I had the whole verse, first verse and the chorus. So I grabbed my phone and hit the record button and started over. And sure enough, the second verse came out of my mouth, and then the chorus. And I thought, okay, well, that's a song, but we got to do something with it to make it like stand out and not just be the same chords over and over again. You know, we wanted to keep it exciting. So I brought it to the band, and Jeremy was like, no, I'm not going to come in until the very, very end, until like the last minute of the song. And we played, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking like, when's he going to come in? When's he going to come in? And all of a sudden he came in like thunder. And I was like, holy shit, this is exactly what it should feel like. Because it's like what you said. It's like, you know, it's coming and you can feel it. And, you know, we had one person say it felt like you were in a car chase. And you know that it was only going to end by you wrapping your car around like a telephone pole. You know you're not getting away from this one. But yet you still continue on. You don't want to like look away or stop. Mm. And that's that feeling, man. It's like getting caught in a lie by somebody that you've hurt and that you love, and just that horrible feeling of it and not knowing what to do, how to fix it, or you know, how to get out of it. It's an explosive feeling, you know, and that like anger and that fight that comes from it as well. It's like, it's explosive. It's big. So it was only fitting that the song tried to capture that as well, I guess.
I look deep into her blue eyes. I can't believe that I saw through all her lies. She used to say she'd be the only one. She had a temper like a loaded gun.
I love the line, she had a temper like a loaded gun. That's really good.
Thank you. See, that's an interesting thing, because that whole verse is about, that's a different situation. The first verse is like separate. The first verse was my lie. The second verse was somebody else's lie from a different time in my life. And one of the things that the engineer producer, Michael Esfer, said that he really dug about the song was that it wasn't just like me singing about, oh, I've been lied to and everybody lies to me and this and that. It's like the perspective of both sides, and not just putting it all on somebody else, like owning up to the you know, owning up to it a little bit, that I'm far from perfect and that I'm capable of doing it as well. But yeah, that was, she did. That woman had a temper like a loaded gun. Like she did. You know, I had a rotary phone thrown at my head once because of her temper, so.
Wow. So that's great, though, you know, that you can put these, I suppose, different situations together into even the same song. So, like you say, it isn't all just, so, you know, poor me or whatever. It brings more of a rounded story, and rather than just from one perspective. Just a couple more questions before we wrap things up. You have, you know, mentioned Nashville and living there and recording there. And obviously, all over the world, Nashville is known for country music. So I was wondering, what's it like over there playing rock music? Is there much of a scene there? Is it harder or is it easier? What's the scene like outside of what people would normally think of when they would think of Nashville?
That's a good question. The scene here, in my opinion, is really unique and cool. It's different because you have like the mainstays of Nashville, which are country and pop country and Christian contemporary music, is actually really huge here. A lot of the labels are here. Like, there's a lot of venues in this city. I mean, just hands down. And hopefully, you know, there still will be when everything loosens up again after you know, this whole thing works its way out. But the support is here. Like there's venues like The End, The Basement, you know, The Cobra, Springwater, The High Watt, The Mercy Lounge, Cannery Ballroom. These are all like really amazing venues. Like these are venues that like any city would be excited to have in their arsenal of venues, and they're all here. Like any one of them could be in any city and people would be like, we're excited to have this one. And they support local music, man. They really do. Like, you know, we had some really big shows coming up at The Basement and at The High Watt. And both of those are homes for like, you know, international touring acts. Like The Basement's smaller, but it doesn't change the fact that like they've hosted shows by Metallica. It's kind of bizarre. It's like, because of it, you know, it's still Nashville. It's like you get these amazing sound systems, no matter the size of the room, with people who are super competent and trained in being sound people. I grew up where it was like, okay, you got Mike on the kick drum, run into a sub, and then you have like two PA speakers for vocals and everything else is on the band, you know? And that was what I was used to playing through when we first got started back in the day in Sacramento, and we made it work. Or playing venues that are awesome, but the monitors cut out like every 5 seconds. So you're never really hearing yourself because it's always broken. It's always broken up and like stuttering almost, you know? And then all of a sudden you get out of here and it's like $1 million sound systems in these places, and it's like you start to sing and play and you go, oh my god, this sounds amazing. It's so much easier. It's so much easier when you can actually hear yourself on stage. And the scene itself, there's so many cool bands here in Nashville right now that, you know, are regional bands and maybe don't even tour, might not have albums out or just have a single here, a single there, but like there's some really cool rock and roll happening in the city. There's psych rock happening in the city. There's punk rock happening in the city. There's a lot of DIY underground stuff. There's some killer metal bands, like super heavy rock and roll bands. People share bandmates a lot here. Like you'll find guys who play in like three different projects and nobody's got a problem with it. Nobody's got any attitude toward that. It's just like in general, there's so many good musicians in this city. Just a quick little story to give an example. I was at a show about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. One of my drummer, his band was playing, his other band, which is called Kitchen, Kitchen without an E. It's cool American, like replacements kind of punk rock. They were playing a show with another band. We were watching them and the drummer was just killing it. Absolute monster. And we're outside afterwards talking to him, and he's like, yeah, I just got hired for the gig. He's like, I just filled in. I'm like, dude, you're phenomenal. Like, that's insane that you're just a fill-in. He's like, yeah, I mean, I'd play more, but I just don't have the time. He's like, my other gig takes up too much time. And I was like, oh, yeah, what's your other gig? And he's like, oh, I'm Taylor Swift's drummer. Huh. And I was like, oh.
Right.
I was like, okay. So, you know, and it's like, you just don't know who you're going to see in this town playing with who. Like, you really don't. I mean, like, the connections are so deep here. And everybody's, like, for the most part, so humble. Like, you talk to any of these people, and no one gives you, like, this attitude. Like, I'm too cool for school, you know? It's, like, it's just a really cool scene and really cool people. And it's competitive. It's hard. There's a lot of bands here. There's a lot of good bands here. Pretty regularly, if you want a show, you better be ready to book it like 6 months in advance if you want a good one here.
Wow.
The scene is here. And the scene is, I don't know if I'd say strong, because the rock and roll scene everywhere is struggling, I think, unfortunately, even without this current pandemic. But as far as the people involved here, you know, there's a lot of really good people doing a lot of really cool stuff. And I'm just proud that we're a part of it.
And following on from that then, so you mentioned your tour there, so you done a few dates in England and here in Ireland. What made you decide to do that, and what did you learn from it, and how did you find playing to the different audiences compared with, say, back in Nashville?
So in 2016, I had a song on an old album that I released. The song is titled Devil's Bitch. There's like a slightly new version on the new album that's coming out of it. But that song got played on Severn FM, internet radio station based in Gloucester. And over that year, it got played quite a few times. And then at the end of the year, they did a nomination for Track of the Year. And it was up for Track of the Year. And we ended up winning that year.
Okay.
And that got us an invite over to do the Gloucester Rhythm and Blues Festival. So 2 years ago, I went with my friend Nick Parrish, and the two of us went and did like a two-piece tour throughout Southwest England. And we just met a lot of people and played some shows here and there and kind of like made those connections. And then we got invited back the second year, and they asked if we could bring a full band that time, and I was able to. So we booked a two-week tour. We played, that was 14 days, including travel days from the U.S. to Heathrow and Heathrow back. And so we ended up 12 days on the ground, and we played 7 shows. We played 2 in Gloucester. We played 1 in Bath. We played Waterford, Cork, Dublin, and then finished off in London. And we had a blast doing it. Each city was so different. The vibe was different. The groups we played with were different. We had a lot of fun. You know, it's like, it's interesting to see from city to city how it's received and how people react. As far as England went, Gloucester always really loves us, and they host us well. And they, you know, we played a show at a small pub called the Fountain Inn, which is like one of the oldest in England. And then we went the next night and played a show in Bath. And that was a pretty good turnout, but it was smaller. But we played with 2 local bands, one from Salisbury, Mighty Magic Animal, and then the other band, Charivari, which is from Bath. Both really cool bands, really great guys. But that was kind of more your typical, like, regular live night. The Gloucester shows were part of the festival, so there was a bigger turnout. The second show in Gloucester was on a big outdoor stage, right next to a church that was like built in like 1300s or early 1400s, which is mind blowing for all of us from the States, you know? You know, and then we got over to Ireland and took the ferry across, which was so much fun. And then, our first show was in Cork, and, you know, the turnout wasn't that great, but it was also a crazy thunderstorm that night. So it was really wet. You know, we were like, oh God, Ireland's going to be rough. And then the next night was, or 2 nights later, I think, was in Waterford when we played with you and Kerry at Whiskey Baja. And they, man, that was so much fun. Like, we had no idea what we were getting into. We walked in there before people had gotten in there, and I'm like, where's the stage? And the owner was like, right there.
Right where you're standing.
And I was like, that's like a 2-foot gap between the wall and the bar. And she's like, yeah, I know. Can you make it work? I was like, yeah, you know? And then by the time we got in there to play, the place was packed. And, you know, we came in and it was like, you know, there were some people in easily in their 80s. And I thought, oh, we're going to lose them. It's going to be too loud. And we started playing, and they sat the whole thing out. They enjoyed it. Like, there was one guy who looked old enough to be my grandpa, you know, who had his cell phone out videotaping the whole set. Like, he loved it. You know, it was just such a good experience. And then hearing y'all play and Kerry sing and everything, it was just, Waterford was a pretty special night. Waterford's a cool little city, you know. And then Dublin was great too. We had a really good experience at Chennai. The sound was amazing. The crowd was great. The hangout after the after party. it was just fun, man. We had a blast. Like, Ireland was amazing. I always screw the name up, but that, you know, there's the monastic city that's just kind of south of Dublin in the mountains. I have to look up the name again, but there's a picture that I took that's on the back of the 12 inch from one of the churches that was in there. You know, it was like the history in Ireland and the countryside just like blows me away. It really does. Yeah, it was Glendalough. Glendalough?
Oh, Glendalough.
Glendalough. Yep. Yeah. You know, we went and walked around there, and that was after our show, and the next day after our show in Dublin, and it just everything about Ireland was so magical. It was such an experience.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Just before I let you go, thank you for taking the time to chat to me. I think we went on a bit longer than I said we would. It's been very interesting. I'm going to have a right struggle on my hands editing this one. But hopefully, yeah, we will have you back again for when the album's released. And best of luck with the album and with the single. And where can people, if they want to look you up, where can they check you out?
So right now, the But Anyways and Lies are both up basically everywhere. It's in iTunes, it's in Spotify, Apple Music, Google Music, all that stuff. You can find it on SoundCloud. If you just look up Nahoda, you'll find them. If you are interested in buying the 7-inch single, you can go to Bandcamp and search Nahoda. That's just all one word by itself. And then, you know, click on Dear Mr. President. We also have a website, you know, www.nahodamusic.com. You know, we're on Facebook, Instagram. When the vinyl is released in October, we will have that available to ship as well. I have no idea what shipping will cost to get it over to England and Ireland, but, you know, we can make it work if somebody wants it. So otherwise, I'm hoping next summer we'll make it back. You know, that's a goal. We were supposed to be back this summer, but unfortunately, like I said earlier, the world had different plans for us.
Yeah. When you do come over to us next year, be sure to give us a shout in advance, let us know, and we'll come and see you play.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to actually just get to hang out, have a meal, and drink some Guinness. Just hang out, you know.
That sounds like a beautiful plan.
Doesn't it though?
The pubs have only reopened here this week, so I haven't had a pint of Guinness in, God, since February. It's it doesn't bear thinking about. Yeah, well, hopefully we will make that happen.
We will. It may be a while, but we'll make it happen.
Yeah. Thanks to Patrick for being so given of his time. I had said to him before we'd done the interview a couple of weeks ago, it would take us about 40 minutes thereabouts, and I think we ended up talking for almost an hour and a half. So really interesting chat though, and looking forward to hopefully having Patrick back on again when their album comes out, which is due in October. So do go and look up Nahoda. There already is a 7-inch single available now, and you can look that up on Bandcamp. And they have 2 tracks up on Spotify and Apple and all those other streaming places. So look up Nahoda there as well. And yeah, keep an eye out for that album. I've already heard it, as I mentioned in the interview, and it's a belter. So definitely one to keep on the horizon, and looking forward to hopefully digging into more of the tracks of that album when it's out in October. So thank you for listening to episode 5, and episode 6 should be on the way probably in another month or so, all going well. Hopefully I'll have a new laptop by then. And any bands who would like to take part on the show, please feel free to drop an email to insidesongpod@gmail.com and Twitter @insidesongpod and Facebook Inside Song Podcast. And I'm also thinking of interviewing a few other people too that are not necessarily in bands but are connected to the music industry. So keep an ear out for that. I will update you if and when it happens. So until the next episode, thanks for listening. Take care. Talk soon.